Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is their text number, and Joe at RT.ie. Let's go to this latest scam. Brian Hogan. Brian, good afternoon. A sophisticated scam, bit of organisation involved. What happened?
Hi, good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for having me on. So the story is, I've been searching for a long time for some more appropriate accommodation to move in via Daft, and I've been kind of looking literally every sort of section of Dublin for at least 6 months. So I've been searched up and down. So about a week and a half ago, I found this place on Daft in Smithfield. Price seemed, you know, not outrageous, reasonable enough for the area. So I obviously went for it. So I had an email back from this person who was supposed landlord of the place, and went to view the flat there on last Sunday eve. And was in communication with this supposed landlord and the supposed tenant via email and WhatsApp. There was nothing that kind of led me to believe anything was, you know, suspicious. There was pictures of this person, not this person's family, but a picture of an Irish family on the WhatsApp photo, all of that kind of thing. So all the boxes were sort of checked in my head. Went and met the, you know, false tenant, as it turns out, and this person showed me around the flat on Sunday evening. They'd been cooking, apologised for the bit of the mess in the kitchen, and you know, the television on, place it looked lived in, everything, and left me alone in the room to kind of see the flat. It was a lovely apartment with a nice balcony facing out into Smithfield Square and all this. So obviously I did my best to make a good impression and asked a few questions. Nothing really jumped out at me as a red flag. And as I was leaving, this person had told me I was the 10th person to view it that day, and there was another guy on the way in as I was leaving.
Okay. Just to be clear, the tenant who was there, the person who was obviously acting, the deal was that you would be sharing the apartment with that person.
That was supposed to be the deal.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's why she was there, she was cooking away, she was foostering around the place as if she lived there. But did she interview you and to see where you're compatible as a prospective room or flatmate? Not roommate, flatmate.
So, I mean, like, I'd already given sort of personal information about myself. I work as a nurse full time, have done for a long time now. Mental health, and like, kind of, you know, she didn't ask me too many questions, but I sort of, she told me she was the pretend landlord told me that she was studying law, her final year of law in Maynooth. So I asked her about that. She also told me she was a care assistant in one of the private hospitals in Dublin, told me what her shift pattern was, talked about the stress of you know, her study, trying to balance work and studying and all this. So we did have a conversation.
Okay. Very, very convincing, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose I was a bit blinded by the quality of the place and getting excited about being closer to work. So I work in the city centre and everything that sort of comes with that. What happened after that, I'd been in contact on WhatsApp with the quote-unquote landlord that day. He'd sent me the postcode, everything, and I let him know, look, I've seen the place, I'd love to take it, and that this person thinks I'm suitable. And I got an email from this landlord, you know, to inform me that, thank you, sorry for the delay, because I'd been so prompt with replies, and I'd sent him, you know, every bit of information that they usually ask for, as in, you know, payslips, ID, and he said, you've been selected, congratulations, it was a very tough decision. And then at that point, I had contacted this other tenant, I guess, and he tenancy agreement was sent, a supposed registration for underground parking, which I had to wait 24 hours for to be registered, which I thought was normal because that's the exact same as where I'm living now. It took the 24 hours to get registered with the parking. So that was obviously a delay tactic in hindsight. And so I'd been back and forth with the tenant on WhatsApp trying to arrange to collect the keys for when I was finished work. And, you know, the detailed conversation I sent to your producer, this person had said, I'm glad it was you. Other people were giving me really weird vibes. So left you this kind of thing. So all very convincing. And then I believe it was Wednesday, and I texted her, letting her know what time I'd be out of work and what time I'd be. Cause, like, she said just to call me before.
Now, has money changed hands at this stage, Brian?
At this stage, I'd sent €1,740, unfortunately. Yeah.
And they said to you, thanks for the money, hang on a bit, because we've got to register your car. That'll take 24 hours. In the meantime, they were whipping the money cashing your money. Okay, so we take us to Wednesday then.
So, yeah, I couldn't make any contact with this person. The messages on WhatsApp were being left unread. I kind of left it because I didn't want to be, you know, she'd sent me this sort of story and I'd fallen for it. I didn't want to be too pushy and, you know, risk my place. Then I started to get very suspicious by Thursday morning. I couldn't contact her or the supposed landlord. And then obviously the wheels started spinning. I'd been asking family and friends what to do. They all kind of thought I was going a bit mad, but as it turns out, I wasn't. There was no contact whatsoever. So it became very, very clear as the hours went on then that I'd been scammed. So at that point, myself and my girlfriend Amy went to guard station to report it. And just out of pure coincidence, while we were waiting to report, there was a young guy who I believe is going to be on as well, Kieran, my heart sank, both our hearts sank, because he was describing the exact same details, the appearance of this person, everything. We just overheard it and same I couldn't scale. Believe it. It was just by pure coincidence that it was the same time. We went in the evening time just to avoid traffic and stuff. And
now, did anyone go back to the actual apartment and see who was in it?
This so Kieran had said that he did go back there. That was kind of my initial thought, but I was convinced not to do that because, you know, I obviously wasn't in the best headspace at the time. But my thought was just to try and find out something. But he had said he went back and discovered that there is someone else staying there and renting it from another place, which I won't mention the name of the place, obviously. But this was all
so that so-called landlord. With the email address, the so-called tenant with the WhatsApp group, between the two, they were in cahoots. They they obviously had booked the apartment, maybe even for a night or two nights.
Probably more. The ad was up for about a week, so I estimate that, you know, anywhere between 10 to 50 people could have been viewing that place, just from experience, because I've gone to viewings in the last 6 months where there's been 20 people queuing outside the place. You know what I mean? No exaggeration with that either.
Bad cess to them anyway, because they've you're looking for accommodation, hard to get in Dublin. They played you like a fiddle. And it was a fiddle, the two of them. And you're down nearly $2,000. But also, where are you now living, Brian?
So I'm in Artane, but throughout, like, I've been kind of trying to get, like, I'm sharing with a lot of people who are a good bit younger than me in the way, like, I work shift work very hard in the nursing sector, obviously working in the emergency mental health setting, and, you know, often it's difficult to sleep, and, you know, I won't go into details, but it's just not ideal. So I gave my notice, you know, my month's notice as a result of this, and, you know, now it's kind of, I'm not homeless by any stretch of imagination. I've, like, supportive girlfriend, supportive family, everything, but it's left me kind of, you know, in a bit of a
okay, Brian, Brian, I'm thinking, what could you have done differently?
I don't really know, Joe. Like, in hindsight, people have said to me, you know, never hand over money until you have keys in your hand. But, I mean, I've done this. I've been renting for 10 years, and this is the way it usually goes. And if you approach it that aggressively, you know, you're more likely to risk losing your chance to So I don't know. I really don't know.
Because supply and demand. How sophisticated, like, don't mean to be petty, but when you went into the apartment and she's there and she's cooking away, like, what's she genuinely cooking, do you think?
Well, he had just kind of finished cooking, not like, you know, there wasn't like...
Was there the smell of cooked food? That's what I mean.
Yeah. And there was kind of bits and pieces around.
It was sophisticated.
Yeah, and as I said, she left me alone in the room. And in hindsight now, God, anything could have really happened in that situation, which is quite scary. So, I mean, yeah, I'm disappointed and gutted with the loss of money because, you know, it's put me in a very difficult situation. But it's just more to... get a warning out to people. Like, I can imagine when McKieran will tell a story, it'll absolutely break your heart. Like,
Okay, I'll go. You've introduced, stay there with us, Brian. 51551, joe@rt.ie. Kieran, good afternoon.
Hiya.
Hey, good. You're on WhatsApp. Kieran, you were scammed as well by the same couple, basically.
Yeah, I was.
So, what happened in your case?
I was looking for a place. And like Brian said, found a place in Smithfield, and it was like, it wasn't too expensive, it wasn't dirt cheap, it was kind of a good place and a good area.
Okay.
And I applied for it, got an email back asking to view the apartment.
Okay.
So I went down at 5 p.m. on Sunday afternoon to view it. And when I was there, there was another couple of people there also viewing it.
Okay.
And I got a tour. About 15 minutes she showed me about, and it looked genuine. Like, to me, it looked like she was just watching TV, like, and like had to get up to show me about and stuff like that. It looked very genuine. I went home, went back and got an email later that afternoon asking me for like wage slips and passport identification and ID, driver's license identification, residencies. And told me I got the place. Asked me for, like, what way would I want to send the money, through the bank, through the envelope, and told me I can go and collect the keys off the roommate. I got a text off them, and they were like, "Hi, I'm happy it was you. I'm glad we'll be able to share the place, etc., etc." And I was supposed to go move in on the Wednesday. So I went down on the Wednesday with a couple of duct tacks just to move in.
Okay.
And couldn't get an answer on any phone, the door, chap on the door, never got an answer.
Yeah.
And it was at that Wednesday night I was suspicious. But I thought I'd give him the benefit of the doubt until the Thursday.
Okay.
And once I couldn't get the reply back on the Thursday, that's when I was 100% sure I had been scammed.
And you went to the Gardaí as well. Kieran, did you... Obviously, they concentrated their scam in a window of time because they needed this whole thing about come Wednesday seemed to be the day that they were pushing everyone back to.
Yeah.
When was there other people viewing the apartment when you were there, Kieran, coming or going?
There was one girl who was viewing it before me. And then I went in, and then like another guy came in after me to view it as well. So there was definitely quite a few people, I think, that they got with it.
Wow. And how much were you hit for?
1,740.
Yeah. Bad system anyway.
Yeah.
And so, where does that leave you, Kieran?
It left me having to move back home to Scotland.
For God's sake.
I had to give up my job and stuff like that because it just... It wasn't feasible anymore after losing that amount of money. And there was, you know what Dublin's like when it comes to the houses in the first place. There was really no chance. So with the last of the money I had to get a flight home.
How did you transfer the money to them, Kieran?
I did it through bank transfer.
Okay, so they got it rapid. And as a bank transfer. By the way, you then met Brian in the Garda station.
Yeah, so what happened was I was on my way to a place for the night because I was flying home the next day. I was flying home the Friday. So on the Thursday, I was on the Lewis going towards the airport and decided to jump off the loos.
Good man.
At the forecourts, and I was like, I might as well go and report it to the guards.
Well done, yeah.
So I went in and gave him all the details and said everything that happened, and then the guard said, he's got to write up a letter, I'll just go and sit down right now. So when I sat down, Brian came up to me and was like, the exact same scam. They were like behind me in the queue, and they were like, the exact same scam just happened to us, the same people.
And the same same description of the same, well, you didn't meet the landlord, of the same so-called tenant.
Yeah, literally the exact same story.
And you reckon it was the same person?
Yeah. Yeah, 100% the same person.
Did the Gardaí ask for descriptions of the tenant?
Yeah, I gave him description of the tenant.
Okay.
But the landlord, I never met in person.
Yeah, of course, that was part of the scam. Did the Gardaí say anything about seizing CCTV?
No, that I can remember when he spoke to me. I told him that they could look at the cameras. I tried to give him as much details as I could.
Good man.
I said there's cameras outside because it's a big apartment block.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I tried to give him as much details as I could to try and help along, you know.
I hope the Gardaí are taking this seriously. Seems a lot of people were scammed by this Bonnie and Clyde crowd, or not. Anyway, this two of them, so-called man and woman. By the way, when Kieran and Sam asked Brian the same question, given that you were going to be sharing the apartment with her, did you become suspicious did she ask you enough questions to enable her to judge whether you would be a good flat share or not?
Yeah, she did. Like, she was telling me she was doing law at Maynard. And I was asking her, are you doing criminal? What type of law are you doing?
Mm.
And she had a good backstory. She was like, I don't know if I'm going to do criminal, family law, this law, that law. I haven't decided yet. I asked a few questions just to try and be nice and like get to know her if I was going to live with her. And she kind of had an answer for everything that I asked.
Yeah. And then when you went back on the Thursday, did you actually get to the apartment door?
Yeah. I got to the apartment door.
Yeah.
And there was no answer. Yeah. But I remembered the landlord telling me that she didn't finish work till like 6 o'clock, and I was there a wee bit earlier than that.
Okay.
So I tried to get a benefit of doubt.
Yeah.
But when I tried to phone both of them at like 7, the back of 7, there was no answer at all. And I gave them multiple phone calls the rest of that night, on the Wednesday night, and I was getting no answer. So I tried to give the benefit of doubt, because it was late the Wednesday night, there was no answer. And I gave them till the Thursday to get an answer back, and I never got one back.
But when you knocked on the apartment, did anyone open?
No, but after standing there for a little while, people went into it that weren't completely different people.
So they had rented it separately, but completely innocently?
Yeah, exactly.
And completely legitimately?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Brian, did you ever see the landlord or ask for a video call?
No, I didn't ask for a video call. I sort of just took WhatsApp picture. It's family with young children and things, which is another kind of.
You didn't by any chance at either of you, begin with Brian. You didn't by any chance at any stage say, "Can I take photographs of the apartment?"
No.
No, I could have easily. I was left in the room. I regret now not doing that, but yeah.
But I doubt if she would have let you take photographs of her.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't say so. But I'd know her straight away now.
Oh, would you? You'd recognize her.
Absolutely, distinctive enough now. Yeah, without going into details, but yeah, you would definitely recognize her. The other point, Joe, I just wanted to make as well as important.
Brian, sorry. Did you say to the guards, I would definitely recognise this woman again?
Well, yeah, that was going to be my point. When I said that, they had mentioned a few months back, something similar had happened in Kilmainham and someone matching that description, which was another thing that really
Let her scam away and hit vulnerable people. Left, right, and centre. Yeah. God knows how many she hit with her co-conspirator, her fellow criminal. Many of the two of them hit in that very short space of time. By the way, Kieran, when you knocked on the door and the family opened, did you get the impression they were tourists or they were renting it for months, if you follow me?
No, it was definitely like a they were like, oh, we're out here tomorrow. So I think they were just like, two of the, something like that. They were only booked it for like 1 day or 2 days, something like that.
Now, did daft.ie come near you, Brian or Kieran, Brian Forrest?
So yeah, with a bit of difficulty, it's impossible to contact them via phone, and but they did eventually. I got three different correspondents. The first one, just saying apologies to hear what happened to you, and two bits of advice: A, go to the Gardaí; B, don't contact us or respond to this person. And then I actually got the ad was kind of, you could still press into the ad and go to the link, but then the link would say the place is no longer available. Mm. And then I had a correspondence from yesterday morning informing me that this place has been subject to fraudulent activity. So I emailed them back kind of saying, you know, it's not really good enough. I haven't had any kind of, you know, direct information. And then I got another email back yesterday, and they explained we saw no red flags placed on the ad. Their email and contact was verified, and scammers are becoming more sort of advanced. Mm. So we do what we can, essentially. Yes, when the Gardaí contact us, we'll follow it up. It was said on that email as well.
So with daft.ie, and we're asking them for this indication, daft.ie would have a fair idea from people like you communicating with them, because people saw it on daft.ie. They'd have a fair idea of how many people were scammed for nearly $2,000 each.
They should know exactly, I'd imagine, yeah.
Yeah. And Brian, did you get the impression, like, I'm thinking CCTV, the guard said to Kieran, or something like this happened in Kamainham a few months back. Did you get the, well, it's wrong to work on impressions as well, but like, did they say, oh yeah, there's the two detectives working on that, and I'll make sure we add two and two together?
I didn't, to be very honest, like the chap I spoke with was nice and everything, but I didn't get the impression that. I think it was more of a kind of token necessity to report to the Gardaí. That's hence why, well, actually, Amy contracted your producer. And
I'm thinking, Brian, if you're in Store Street at a specific time, it's a very long shot that someone else who's also been scammed by the exact same couple lands in Store Street. That would indicate to you that quite a few people were scammed.
Yeah, it would, yeah.
Yeah. Kieran, is there? Well, obviously, there's not. Kieran, did you go back to Scotland because you were demoralised, or you were just homeless?
Well, yeah, I ended up living in a hostel for a couple of nights.
Okay.
Because I was kind of,
yeah,
you know, wishing on a miracle. Hopefully, I wasn't scammed. Hopefully, it was a misunderstanding. Hopefully, I can find somewhere else. But it got to a point where I knew it wasn't feasible, and it wasn't feasible to continue living in Dublin. So I just had to go home.
But what about your work or work prospects?
I had to go and explain it to them, and just say, like, this is what happened, here's the deal. Really, I apologise, but it's just not feasible. I don't have a roof over my head. I don't have the money to go and get a roof over my head. Luckily, I have a family back home that I can go and see. You know, someone else who got scammed might not have that.
Yeah, but still, you lost. Not only did you lose the money, not only are you demoralised for such a filthy thing to do on the people who are looking for accommodation in Dublin, you also, you had a job, and the job is gone because you're back in Scotland.
Yeah, well, I've been living in Dublin 2 years since I was 19. I'm 21 now. And I had the opportunity to go home to Glasgow multiple times, but I didn't want to because I loved being over in Dublin. And this kind of forced my hand to go back, unfortunately.
And I remember we came across, and well, it's at least this time of year, it's one every month. But I remember one of the last ones we did was the couple who were scammed. I think there were two Japanese ladies, two Japanese women. They were scammed. And they stood on the street, just bereft, not for any reason, outside the so-called address that they'd paid the money for. And someone approached them and said to them, oh, you've been, it might have been someone from a local shop, and said, have you been scammed as well? And then they realised they weren't the first. I'm just wondering where you were. Is there a local shop or is there anyone that would... No, but you can't watch the comings and goings. You wouldn't know the comings and goings in an apartment block, would you? You wouldn't.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't. I wouldn't. It was quite a big apartment block. But I never realised those other people had been scammed until I met Brian the station later when he was right behind me. That's when I found out there was other people because I thought it was just me.
And had you looked at many places before this, Kieran?
No, that was the only one I got an answer back from.
And Brian, had you looked at places before this?
Yeah, I've looked at my emails. I've seen with at least 35 places trying to find somewhere in the last few months at a minimum.
And no joy.
No joy, really, either. You know, you arrive at these places and they're not in the condition you thought, or people aren't suited, or you know, the expense obviously is huge. Like, I don't make the best wages in the world as a nurse, I'm sure you know. So I have to kind of think about reality. I'm trying to do, we're trying to just get a bit more, like even to share at one or even studio, but it's all kind of unrealistic. So a ton of places.
Know these two criminals know that the likes of yourself, Brian and Kieran, have been, like so many, have been looking at so many places that by the time you get to them, they're presuming, you know, Kieran is not just in off the boat and Brian isn't just up from the country. So they know, they're factoring in that both of you are very keen to get accommodation, and that's why they're putting these trails out. I'm living here, I'm cooking, as you can see, and the smell of onions and the smell of coffee, and I must go in and turn off the telly. I'm always leaving it on and I can't find the remote. So acting that they live there, but they're banking on the fact that the two of you are, desperate is the word for accommodation, like so many in Dublin. By the way, how soon, Brian, after you reporting it to daft.ie, and they should have a hotline. How soon or how soon after reporting it to daft.ie did they put the warning up saying fraudulent activity detected at this address?
So I believe I reported it to Daft on... Yeah, I did. I have it written here. I reported to Daft on Thursday and the warning only came yesterday morning.
So yesterday is Tuesday.
Yeah.
And how... You said you had difficulty getting through to Daft. How?
Well, initially I was desperately searching for a phone number because, you know, I was very flustered and writing emails. And they just sent it to a kind of support desk. Now, they got back to me within maybe an hour and a half, but it was just the first line of it was, we are an online company, therefore all our communication is online. So there is no phone number, because I'd asked why there is not a phone number. Because it could be more urgent situations.
Hang on. In that email, in your initial email, you say I've been scammed.
Yeah. And I get the details.
No fault of daft.ie, but through your legitimate website. Okay. Did they come back and say, you've been scammed, we'll prioritise this?
Not initially, no. No, it was
In their reply email, did they acknowledge, was it a pro forma, or did they acknowledge, this is awful, we're going to activate A, B, C, D?
No, there was nothing like that. It was just report, kind of, weak enough sort of apology, and then once the guards touch base with us, we will tell them all the details we know about this person in the meantime. Just be careful, essentially. So, and you know, the email I got yesterday, it was another kind of being kicked when you're down, just sort of a general email warning this place is fraudulent. Like, I'm well aware of that, obviously, you know. So,
but you're saying it took them 5 days to put up that warning.
To email the warning,
No, if I go into that address on the website now, aren't they?
You won't find it.
Oh, the address is gone. It's gone off their
website. The address is gone, but it was still available last week, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, RTÉ is very, very good to daft.ie. They make regular appearances on Morning Ireland once a month at least to tell us how awful everything is and how brilliant they are. Well, that's their job. So I think they should set up some form of emergency line for people who've been scammed, so more people, which is your mission, Kieran and Brian, today, to try and prevent other people being scammed. It's a lot of money, and it's a nasty scam. It is a nasty scam. Okay. Brian, keep the faith. Ciarán, I hope you come back to Ireland soon. And I also hope the Gardaí come back to you and say, listen, we photographed CCTV. Will you help us? You say, Ciarán, you could easily identify this woman.
Yeah, I could.
Brian, Brian Hogan, could you easily identify this woman?
Yeah, absolutely.
She's very, very distinctive looking.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, where's the guards? Come back, come on with the CCTV and say, is this the woman? And let's ask the guards up in Kilmainham, do you know about this woman? Was she the same person who scammed? And let's try and stop this awful, cynical crime. Okay, Brian Hogan and Ciarán. Thank Ciarán Cain. Thank you both. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Remember, Daft.ie advertised themselves, rightly, as Ireland's number one property website. And you can't give us an emergency hotline, which specifically says if you want to report a property that you have had difficulties with, i.e. been scammed, please ring this number for this reason and no other. I can understand what he said. We don't want everyone ringing us saying I rented an apartment and the tap is leaking. But is there an emergency hotline? Why not an emergency hotline on Ireland's biggest property website? And also, can they give us an indication how common is this type of scam? Sharon, it didn't begin with a scam, but it ended with a near scam. What happened in your case, Sharon? Different story.
Different story. Yeah. We flew into Faroe Airport yesterday, myself and my daughter and my niece, who's a wheelchair user, and the rest of the family. And upon arrival to Faroe, we found that Katie's wheelchair had been dropped from the airplane onto the tarmac and was damaged completely, unusable. So it took a while to get all that information, and then we found to our horror that there was actually no help for us. Nobody offered us any help, and it was a bit of a drama at the airport. So we finally got to the hotel, and my daughter had put it up on Facebook, you know.
Okay, now just go back to Faro again.
Yeah.
First of all, I presume, like most wheelchairs today, they are specific to the person.
Well, Katie has this very rare syndrome, so her wheelchair is made for her and her only. It's not one that would be used commonly. It's to fit her needs. Now, it is a manual wheelchair. It's not electric. Yeah. It's manual. But
so where does the wheelchair go while you're on the plane?
So when we book the wheelchair assistance, we get to the airport, to the airplane door. We're brought to the door, and then Katie's transferred by a aisle chair to her seat.
Okay.
And then her wheelchair is taken then to the stow. So, you know, like when you go with your buggy or whatever, they take it down and they put it in.
Yeah, of course.
And then when you're getting off the plane, your wheelchair is always there waiting for you. Always. So when we got off the plane yesterday, there was no wheelchair. And there were two young workers there to help Katie. And I said, where is the wheelchair? And they were, I don't know, kind of didn't know what to say. And I said, the wheelchair should be here. And they said, no, it's in the oversized luggage. And I said, no, it's never there. But they said, no, that's where it is. So we had to go. We went ahead. We eventually got to the down to the lift, or to where there's supposed to be a lift, but it took a bit of a drama there anyway. So I approached, I seen the outbound flight for Dublin, and I approached a staff member there, and I said, our wheelchair hasn't come off the plane. And she said, oh, did you not hear it? There has been an incident. A wheelchair has been damaged.
Oh,
and I just kind of got upset. And she said, oh, don't worry, it might not be your wheelchair. And I said, well, it is. I said, because we're the only person who actually was using a wheelchair on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, oh, look, when you get outside, it'll be, you know, someone there to help you. And, you know, we'll all be dealt with. So I rang ahead to my daughter and I said, will you look out for the wheelchair? This is coming through the baggage, which never does. So then she seen a man carrying it over to the lost and found, and she approached him and said, oh, that's their wheelchair. And he goes, oh, did you see what happened, or did you hear what happened? And she says, no. Mm. And he said, oh, it fell off the plane. It fell from the plane onto the tarmac. The whole side of it, the wheel was just completely buckled, useless.
Wow.
And part of it was missing. So we couldn't use it. So it was left at the Lost and Found, and we went there for help. And they said, oh, you just have to hire a wheelchair. Now, I don't know if you've been to Portugal or have you ever had to try and hire mobility equipment. It's extremely difficult because it's all booked out. It's not it's just
yeah,
something
of course,
you can do. So we were at a loss. And I said, look, well, we're going to have to take one of your wheelchairs. And they were like, no, you can't take. So we were like, well, what are we to do? This is her wheelchair is her legs. Yeah, she cannot walk.
Yeah.
And if you fell in the airport and broke your leg, you would be assisted.
Yeah,
you would
true.
Be just left
yeah.
there.
Good point.
So I was just like, we can't do this. So we rang Aer Lingus, and the girl that answered there said, oh, well, you can just leave her there and go get a wheelchair, buy one. Or rent one. I said, we can't just do that. We can't do that. So anyway, the heel of the hunt, we got out of the airport. We took one of their airport wheelchairs and we'll bring it back. We have it there. And we've managed to hire one in the meantime. But so Aer Lingus were helping us. We eventually got through. And then my husband had rang them and they said, he had rang me back and said, oh, they will ring you. So this is yesterday evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got a call. Somebody representing Aer Lingus who was extremely professional. Yeah, very, very professional, very helpful. It was so shocked at the whole thing, and we'll help you absolutely. And we were going to reimburse you for the hire of the wheelchair and for the taxi and all this kind of crack. So we're like, that's fine. He said, what would you say it is? I said, well, it's €80 for the wheelchair and it's €50 for the taxi. So I said, that's what it cost us. So he's like, okay. And then he said, so I just need Katie's card details and I'm going to put that through now. Okay. So he sent this link and my daughter was trying to do it. And she said, no, it's not going through. And then he said, oh, we'll try a different card. We did that. And then it was under three cards we did. And then I said, just do it on my card. And when it came to my card, it was like looking for a confirmation. And I seen it was a minus transaction. And I said, no, it means
well spotted.
It was a minus.
Well spotted.
Yeah, so minus transaction. So it was he was looking for minus €368 at this stage. He had tried, I think, for 600.
So he wasn't. He was obviously not Aer Lingus. How did he get your details?
No. So what happened was Niamh had put it up on Facebook and people trying to help. It went other groups, you know the way it does. Put it up on Twitter and apparently this guy approached her through Twitter and it's like a message saying, I'm a rep, like he's some manager from Aer Lingus. It looked very professional, very real. And she passed on to Niamh and that's how he contacted Niamh. He got the details of Niamh's phone number and he was ever so professional and you would never have guessed only when it came to my
Did he get your phone number?
I don't know. So true Facebook, it was Nia's phone number we were expecting a phone call.
The minute you got the phone call you went with it because well one you were yeah. in you were in diffs yeah. and two but it's not yeah. it wasn't Aer Lingus.
No.
And how did you spot given that you
it was
thought
just when it came to
they
my,
were sending
when
you money,
mine.
How did you spot the minus? Well done.
I was just looking, so it comes through, I was doing it on my Revolut card, and I said, send it to the Revolut card, and so you'll always get you have to confirm the transaction with Revolut. So when it came through, I seen it there, and I said, no, that's a minus, he's looking to take money.
Well done.
And she said it to him, and he goes, oh, no, that's an error on my part, and she just said, no, it's a scam, and she hung up, and he didn't, like, obviously, didn't try to ring back or anything,
and did you,
that was the end of that.
Did you get your impression he was ringing from Ireland, Sharon?
No, he was a foreign gentleman, but he was very well spoken. But then anyone I've been dealing with, because we're in Portugal,
I know,
and he had an accent. But I didn't get any listening to, and he was so sympathetic. And
we're
really sorry. And I apologise on behalf of Aer Lingus, and I apologise on behalf of Faro Airport.
But
and couldn't have been nicer.
But Aer Lingus, I presume, well, I'm 99% that Aer Lingus wouldn't ask for your credit card because they'd already have it.
No.
And they say,
it was booked to my, so I had done the booking, so I, and they said, well, we have to reimburse Katie. So, because she was the one that was the injured party.
Yeah, they're smart.
So, again, you know.
My God, they are sophisticated.
Yeah, so it's just like, you know, they will prey on anybody.
Yeah.
anybody, and so they don't have any morals
and
whatsoever.
Given that Katie has a special... By the way, do we know what happened to your wheelchair that it was buckled?
No, they said it dropped from the actual aircraft onto the tarmac.
Did it?
Just wasn't... Yeah.
That's a fair drop.
Erling has been in contact. Yeah, a fair drop. So you can imagine the damage. And we're trying to fix the wheel in the airport ourselves. For sure. We're like flogging a dead horse.
Yeah,
because we were just so upset.
And by the way, where is the buckled wheelchair now?
So we got to the... We had to bring it with us because it has to be repaired. It's hurt. So we got it. The taxi man that we got was very understanding.
Brilliant.
He was great. And he got us into the... Got everything into the big taxi. So he was very good. Got everything in. Had a bit of a struggle. We did it. And now the hotel we're staying in, they have it in storage for me until we're leaving.
Okay, is there any way you can get it fixed out there?
No. No. Okay.
And you're in Faro, are you? Whereabouts? Well, generally.
We're in Salgados, just outside Albufeira.
Okay.
So we managed to get a rental now. So, like, it's not ideal for her, because it doesn't, like, we can get around in it, but, like, for her, it needs, like, you know, that's what happened.
Okay. God,
the Erlings have been in touch and they're trying to, you know, but,
God, they're sophisticated, these scam artists, aren't they?
People are watching things. Yeah, watching you on Facebook and social media.
And you were brilliant when it let your ears prick up when you hear when someone looks for your credit card details.
Yeah. Because I'm always like conscious of scams and, you know, give a number. And it was just when I seen, I said, no, he's trying to take money, not give us any. So there you go.
Well done, Sharon. I hope you enjoyed it. What's the weather like out there today?
It's beautiful. 28 degrees, sunshine.
Well, if it was any consolation, it's 8 degrees here, non-stop rain, freezing, cloudy. Windy.
Don't miss it.
even the polar bears in Dublin Zoo are complaining about the cold.
Well, I'll stay here for the next 9 days happily.
Okay, well, enjoy, won't you? And you're brilliant.
Thanks,
you're brilliant. You and as many
Thank
in your
you.
Group, you, Kate, but don't want
six
everyone.
Of us all together.
Brilliant. Will you? Well, you're looking after each other. Keep it that way and enjoy yourselves.
Yeah.
Okay, Sharon.
We'll do.
Thanks,
Joe.
And keep in touch. Okay, Joe at RT.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie, the Garda Reserve was set up, nearly 20 years ago by the then Minister for Justice, Michael McDowell, and it got off the ground, and despite opposition from the Garda representative authority, which he spoke about in great detail, I'll come back to it in a sec, and at one stage was 1,300 Garda reserves, that's now down to 300, believe it or not. And now there's another campaign, we're told, starting. I can't see it on the website, and if it's on the Garda Síochána website, we'll tell people, because people, it seems, want to join, though their people who have served, their experiences is some of them are negative. I'll come to Pádraig in a sec, but let me go to Pat O'Callaghan. Pat, your experience of joining the Garda Reserve was positive. Tell me about it. Why, when, and what was it like, and what were your powers?
Joe, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. My experience was 100% positive.
Okay.
I was in it from phase two. In my first year, I was very involved in promoting the reserve and going around to different events in the RDS and different companies speaking about the positivity and trying to promote it.
Okay.
And I really enjoyed it. I was in my 18th year there up to 2 weeks ago, and I hit 65. And unfortunately, I had to retire. About 6-8 months ago, in fairness now, my senior authorities, chief superintendent and assistant commissioner, were very supportive of me.
Okay.
I wrote an application in that I'd like to stay and work on, as I'm physically fit and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
In my own job, I'm staying on, working on. There's no issues there at all. But unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, I got the phone call saying, Pat, unfortunately, due to legislation, you have to go.
The legislation was Garda Reserve 65, you're out.
Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, what were you? Had you got the power of arrest, Pat? They do in the UK.
Oh yes, okay. We did. Yeah, but Garda Reserve do have the power of arrest under the Public Order Act. Yes, they came in, I think, about the last 3-4 years.
Okay, they changed it because initially they didn't. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you had full powers. You were always with a full-time member.
Of course, yeah.
But yes, you did have powers to arrest, and there has been many court cases where Reserve Gardaí have arrested people and brought them to court and to be prosecuted.
And how was your... Well, it sounds like your interaction, especially with senior Gardaí, was excellent.
Oh, it was excellent. But all the my colleagues were I had a great interaction. It was all positive. Also, we had powers... with FCPNs to issue tickets for people, say, use a mobile phone or a road traffic offence or anything like that. So we have that as well too.
So what attracted you to it, Pat? It wasn't the money, obviously.
I suppose. No, I always had it, I suppose, fanatic I was, and was many years ago going to join, but unfortunately life took a different direction with different circumstances, financial, etc. So when the Reserve came up, I was only too delighted.
Okay. I'll say with us, Pat, Joe at rt.ie 51551. Pádraig is there now. Pádraig, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Well, when I was in the Tantamore, the Reserves, I passed out. We were all assigned to different stations, but we all had different experiences.
Okay. I need to take a break anyway, Pádraig, and we'll try and improve that line. Back after this. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Pádraig, I hope that's a better line. Pádraig, your experience when you joined the Garda Reserve wasn't... It's not there, isn't it? Okay. Okay. It's Pat still there, is it? Okay, it's Pat O'Callaghan. And Pat, did you have to Pat, did you do like big events? Did you do concerts and paper visits?
Did.
And
I did the paper visits. I did the Quo Pair concerts, Aviva concerts in Malahide. I did them all.
Okay, is Pádraig there? Okay, he's coming through. He did them all. And by the way, your fellow Garda Reserves, men and women. What was looking at them? What was the age group? What was the background insofar as you knew?
There's a diverse background from people of all ranges of life. I'm a logistics manager in the Beasley Food Service Value Centre Cash and Carry Chain. We had a guy who drove the Irish Ferries boats. We had a pilot in Aer Lingus. We have actuary and accountants. We have bus drivers. There's a vast, diverse range of people in the Reserve at this moment in time, Joe.
And was there a camaraderie among the Reserve, or was that across...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
No, there is, yes. There's a WhatsApp group going around, and
everybody shares experiences. You'd recommend people to sign up for it as soon as this new recruitment drive comes through. Pádraig is there, hopefully, on a better line. Pádraig, your experience wasn't all positive. Why did you join?
No, it wasn't all positive, Joe. All I can say is that, all the guards, the reserves that I passed out at the time, none of them are still doing it. I think the most someone done in court was 10 years. So, different stations do it things in different ways. You might assign you to a unit, or they must just maybe win wherever you want, or you win the unit police. Well, let's say, for example,
you're indecipherable from my end. I'll just be trying to improve, and I'll give you... I thought you were on WhatsApp. We'll give you the gist. I'll give you the gist of what you told us in your contact. You remembered that you were a Garda Reserve for 6 years, which is a surprise to me, Pat O'Callaghan. Pádraig says he had to pay for everything. You pay for your meals in the Garda station. It's not true, Pat.
Well, me from the Garda station, if you went in on duty at night shift, you'd bring in your own sandwich, you wouldn't get fed. But if you're at an event,
I'm talking about the canteen. Are you...
In the canteen where I was, there's a machine there and everybody puts in money, you can get a dinner or a chocolate or whatever. But no, if we were at an event, you'd get before the briefing, you'd get your breakfast roll, whatever. It was a morning event and it was an afternoon, you get a dinner. But you didn't have to pay.
Porrig says he remembers a bit of begrudgery from other Gardaí. You don't, obviously. The serving Garda resented the fact of the amount of money being spent to set it up. Now, this was addressed by Senator Michael McDowell. This is obviously years after he set it up. And this was another drive a couple of years ago to try and up the numbers after they gone back down. And the former Justice Minister said that the reserve members of the group of Garda Reserves had faced hostility or neglect, hostility from colleagues or neglect by superiors and indeed politicians and the department. The reserve was less than a quarter of what it should be. He said when the department came in, said, oh yeah, we're going to recruit. He said they gave no figures, no targets, nothing. They just simply said they were going to restart the whole process of recruitment. It's very clear to me, said the former minister who set up the Garda Reserve, that the Garda Reserve has been allowed to decline by official neglect for a long period. He said this is due to a number of issues. When I originally founded, some people in the Garda Representative Association were radically opposed to it. They feared it might affect their well-being and their terms of service. And they stated that they were going to wait in the long grass for me. That's a very famous quote. I ceased to be minister in 2007. But from what reservists have told me in emails that I have received, and I've received quite a number, he said, a lot of reservists encountered hostility or neglect or were underused. Their voluntary activity was never really recognised at all in many cases. And he said at one stage, a Garda Reserve was told to stop recruiting. He said it came to a point where the Commission on Policing actually said they weren't being well managed and that the situation was effectively a mess. And they were told, stop recruiting until you work out a strategy. Well, let's hope. Let's hope it's worked out a strategy now. Is Porrig gone or is Linus gone, unfortunately? But that was the... And he said he had a few bad experiences. This is Porrig, where he was ostracised. And then to get your stipend of €1,000, Pat, you have to do what? A minimum of, on average, 4 hours a week. Is that correct?
That's correct. It was 208 hours you had to do up to 2 years ago, and that was reduced to 100 hours.
Okay, for the €1,000 tax-free
for
stipend.
For €1,000.
And was that meant to cover your expenses primarily?
That was meant to cover any expenses you had of getting your uniform dry cleaned or if it had been any petrol expenses, etc. I suppose, I don't think it was legal for them to do it voluntarily. They had to give you something. So
okay. So when, so for example, you have to do a number of days down in Templemore, don't you, training?
Yes, and when I was training, you did 2 weekends, Saturday and Sunday, and then you did over a month, and then you'd do about, I think we did 12 3-hour classes in a divisional headquarters on law and stuff like that, and then you went out. And now the current training, I believe now, is you do 2 full weeks down in Templemore.
Okay, so I'd say the training was fascinating, was it?
It was very intense, it was very interesting.
Yeah, the law.
And very beneficial.
And, yeah.
The law, yeah, like, I mean, it was just a basic law. You had to have a knowledge of, obviously, if you're going to arrest somebody, you need to explain know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But also the physical side of it, like even how to use your baton and handcuffs and the defence training was excellent. And, you know, like, I only did myself a couple of months ago a refresher on the baton training and defence training. And when you're up against an instructor there, it's called the red man. You have to last 60 seconds with him in a ring, and he's coming at you as if he's a very violent person. It's excellent training, I have to say.
And what the red man is the instructor, so to speak.
Yes, he's dressed up as a padded American baseball player, and he's coming at you with whatever, and you have to defend yourself the way you were trained.
And you have the same extendable guard a baton that Gardaí have.
That's, you have the exact same equipment, pepper spray, extendable baton that works.
Yeah. And obviously you're taught how to use the pepper spray.
Oh, there are classes we do is in the same classes as the full-time members.
Brilliant.
We're integrated in that training,
Now, the minister said she will increase, or the government said they will increase the stipend for expenses, etc., up to 3,000. Now, I don't think it's one big jump. I presume it'll come year after year. Well, do you think that'll make a difference, Pat?
I don't think the financial thing will make a difference, no.
Okay.
No.
So why did so many people leave? That's the question.
Well, I suppose it's not for everybody. Being a Garda is a very, very challenging role. I'm in my 18th year, and from going back to year one and to what you see today and what you see on social media, I suppose maybe I'm 65, and when you come across a situation in public order, or in a public, in a bar or whatever you come to in the car, I suppose the older you have that more life experience and how to deal with something in talking your way. I suppose I do a lot of customer service. And you do some of that training work with the Garda. And some of the Garda training, I do some of that in my own job, particularly the famous DDTP, day, time and place. If you come across anything or whatever, the importance of documenting and dating and keeping a note and record of the facts. So there's great learning on both sides of your own job and the Garda. But it is by no means an easy job at all these days. It's very challenging and it's not for everybody. Yeah. That's for reserves and full-time.
And then you see, Pat, you've seen it as well as I do, almost every day up on social media, somebody at a protest right up in the Garda's face with a phone and shouting at them and spittle-gong everywhere and the most horrific abuse being directed at Gardaí, and a lot of them hold their patience. I was watching one particular scene last week, and it was a female Garda, and she deserves a medal. She deserves a medal. The venom that they were shouting at her and in her face, and she, I don't know who the Garda is, but she definitely, as a lot of them do, for putting up with that nonsense. But hopefully,
I remember my first training down in Templemore, we were training how to do a Garda checkpoint. Okay. And there was eight of us lined up. And the car was an off-duty Garda, drove up. And he gave us the most audacious, horrible, why are you delaying me? Really in your face.
Yeah.
And I remember then in the canteen afterwards, he met us and he said, "Lads, first of all, I want to apologise for that. 99 times out of 100, you won't come across that. But we're just giving you the training, how to stay calm. Because you don't know what you're going to meet. And you just have to stay, it's not easy, you stay professional and focused." But what's out there today, as you well know, it's a very tough challenge, particularly on the young recruits coming out.
Then the first thing, if they come up to you and you bump into them, or they're Garda brutality and he's after assaulting me and ringed anyway. It's a tough job.
The other thing, Joe, is as well too, is where the Garda are powerless is, like you'd be at events there and you see these scrambler motorbikes flying up and down the road there. Like I was at an event there a couple of weeks ago and two members of the public Morven said, "Garda, we're not doing about that." And it's I'm off, sorry, but we can't. See, there's a complete fair there, which would he not chase after that? But you can't do that. And the public are very frustrated and are not aware that the Garda are not allowed to chase these individuals. Because if they do and they fall off the bike, whatever, the Garda is going to be in trouble. But that's what you're facing nowadays on the road, the challenges. These people coming up
Okay, Pat, well, thanks indeed. But you say go for it. If you're interested in it, go for it.
It's a great experience. You'll see a life experience from the Garda's Garda that you won't see anywhere else.
Yeah, okay. Okay, thanks indeed, Pat O'Callaghan. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Well, tomorrow, as you know, is the 80th anniversary of D-Day, and you can imagine what the men and women, primarily men as it happened, and primarily from the United States and Canada, who were going to be into Normandy at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. You can imagine what they were going through at this particular time. And I was listening to a lot of them over the last few days, and especially on BBC Radio 4. And I didn't realise. There was one I was listening to this morning early, and he was saying up to 80 years, he was 18 years of age. So he's now 98. And the day he got on the ship, which would be in a few hours from now, he had never been on a ship in his life. And he said not only had he never been on a ship, he'd never been on a beach. So you can imagine, first of all, the seasickness. Two, didn't know. Anyway, just unbelievable sacrifice those people made. Jean Douglas. Jean, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And you come to talk about your father.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And tell us about
my father. Well, my father would have had the experience, so he wasn't going to suffer from seasickness.
Okay.
And he enlisted in the Royal Navy, and he was training just before D-Day. They were training in Hayling Island near Portsmouth.
Okay.
Where they were practicing bringing the landing craft and things in. So he, yes, he was on Arromanche Beach, Gold Beach, 80 okay. years ago tomorrow. And I'm not sure what time he was landing his soldiers at, but he was only 20 years of age and he'd already been put in charge of landing craft. So I was very lucky. He was just a wonderful father and, you know, very proud of him. But he never really spoke that much about what happened in the war. We used to hear the odd story. Usually they were kind of fun things because he had a great sense of humour and he was always sort of joking and, you know, jolly about life in general. And so, you know, he didn't sort of harp on the awful things that happened. We heard a few of them, but not okay. that many.
Yeah. And in terms of him, which seems to be peculiar almost to people who've suffered so grievously, he didn't talk about it. But your father, by the way, his name is Donald Murray Douglas, so should give his full name. What age was he when he enlisted?
He would have been I think 20 when he enlisted. It was okay. not long before that. He was what, 19 or 20 when he enlisted.
Okay, and then he discovered his brother was...
Yes, that's correct. He discovered his brother, Kenneth. He had an older brother, Kenneth, who was mm-hmm. also, you know, a good sailor. And so he had joined the Navy as well. And afterwards, he discovered that Kenneth was actually landing the Americans on the neighbouring beach on Omaha.
Okay.
And my dad was landing British and Irish troops because there were some Irish people.
Yeah, there was a lot of Irish,
soldiers
yeah.
as well. Yes, and he met some too.
There was a lot of Irish involved. Now, both brothers obviously survived.
Both have survived, yes, because I wouldn't be here today. If he
yeah,
hadn't.
Of course. And did your father at any stage mention that whole image we had, and it was recreated in Steven Spielberg's movie Saving Private Ryan. It was recreated on Curragh Beach down in Wexford. But that whole image of these young men invariably coming off these boats, wading through, often being submerged in way, wading through with their rifles in the air or their rifles in plastic, and then coming onto a completely exposed beach and being mown down.
Yeah, so that was terrible. They were under very heavy fire. He was handling the landing craft and bringing the landing craft in, and you know, they were under very heavy fire. And he did tell me about how he had to get onto the beach and burrow like a rabbit into the sand to try and get some sort of shelter. Not that I don't think that would have protected him from the bullets, but I suppose once you're a little bit lower, you know, you're not as spotted as easily to be shot at. And luckily he survived that, but unfortunately one fellow who was burrowing with him, you know, tossed him a coin and said, "Hiya, Paddy, take that for luck," and ran up the beach and got blown up. So he did tell us that bit, which was rather sad.
Yeah.
They were very young, very young.
There was 2,500 American soldiers alone killed on Omaha Beach that day.
Kenneth apparently he had a very difficult time landing the people on the beach because he was, like my dad, he was in charge of a landing craft. And the Americans just wouldn't get off the landing craft, and he had to actually force them off at gunpoint. I mean, you can understand how they didn't want to go into a beach where they were all being mown down. But he had to get them off to go back for more. So it was a terrible situation, but it's amazing to think, you know, that this happened 80 years ago, and when they came back to Ireland, they probably didn't talk about it as much because in those days, you know, the Irish involvement in the Second World War, or the emergency as it was known here, you know, it wasn't sort of highlighted. Now it's great through programmes like yourself.
Real
that
time.
It is being...
And because they were seen that they'd gone off to join the British Army, and certain political forces here saw it as treachery, and the old line, England's.
And he was very
adversity.
Much an Irishman, and his friends
of course,
they were
all Irishmen, and they were all.
They just felt they had to.
Yeah, well, they were
the
people who joined up to fight Hitler were genuine freedom fighters. This, Jean, this is a tape you sent us in. It's your mother, Pat, talking about, but it's a short clip, it's talking about what your late father told her.
He spoke very little about it. I gathered that there was a lot of activity on the beaches, and he had to get his men off. And when he got the men off, he himself decided he'd try and save himself somehow. So he burrowed into the sand like a rabbit and stayed there for a while. And then he looked up and he saw a hill. And he said, there was a little gun there. He thought it was an anti-aircraft. So he went and staggered up there and got to it. And... he gave it a few shots and thinking he was doing great work. And then he got recognition from the RAF that he was firing at them. So that was it. He gave that up pretty quickly and moved on elsewhere. He had to go back onto the landing craft, get it back to where it started from, which I'm not too sure where that was. But... he's lived to tell the tale.
Incredible. And your mother is still with us, Jean.
Oh, yes.
You're
yes.
Brilliant.
She did that recording yesterday evening.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So doesn't that bring it home to us, Jean? I hope it does, especially to younger people, that here we are, here we are talking, listening to a woman almost live in terms of it was recorded last night in great voice, and she was the partner of somebody who landed on D-Day, which was the beginning of the end of the Second World War. It's just incredible how close we are to it generationally. It's not history, it's living history. That's what your mother is, living history. And Jean, what happened to your father after D-Day?
Well, he then transferred to the Royal Indian Navy.
Okay.
And he served out in India for a while. He was in Bombay and he was in Colombo, which was Ceylon, now Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
And then the next thing was he was en route for the planned invasion of Japan when the bombs dropped.
Hiroshima, yeah.
So, the atomic bombs. So... they continued on to Japan to take off the British prisoners of war. And he landed in Japan and they were, you know, taking people on board. And that's when my dad got into trouble. He was always a bit of a rebel. There was a poor prisoner who'd had his teeth kicked out and he was in a dreadful state. And dad brought him down to the officer's mess and gave him a cup of tea and was calming him down. And, you know, that was fine. The man was reviving and everything. But my dad got into trouble because it appears that the man he had brought into the officer's mess was not an officer.
Okay.
And, all the sort of protocol and the rank that was pulled, dad had no time for that. If a person needed help, they were going to get help. Didn't matter whether they were an officer or not. You know, he wasn't stuffy about rank. So anyway, he just grinned and bared. He was fine.
And
he didn't get court-martialed.
And then when did he retire from the forces?
Oh, he continued on a little bit after the end of the war on minesweepers then. And then he, in 1946, he was discharged. He managed to get a discharge from the Royal Indian Navy and came back home.
Did he come back to Ireland?
He came back to Ireland, yes,
And what did he do when he came back here?
Well, he was looking for a job, and he eventually got he was in various jobs, and Then he met my mum, and that was a few years later, and okay. they got married and had a very happy marriage. And he was a wonderful father. I was very lucky to have him. But unfortunately, it's a bit ironic, mm-hmm. he actually died in a sailing accident the Leary. Considering he'd survived all those things in, in D-Day and Japan and the Indian Navy and everything, he had a sailing accident here in Dunleary.
And what age was he when he passed?
He was only 49.
Isn't that so sad?
Yeah.
49 years of age.
That's it, yeah. But we were lucky to have had him as a dad and a husband, and because he was great fun. He was, above all, he was great fun, and he also had a terrific sense of fairness. And funnily enough, he hated guns. He was made a gunnery officer in the Royal Indian Navy, mm-hmm. but he hated guns. He was very anti the idea of killing anybody and any animal even. But,
and did he ever get honoured for his role on D-Day?
Oh, he did get some medals. He got some medals, but he wouldn't have been one for wearing the medals. We have the medals still. My mum looks at them, and it's nice to see them there. But he wouldn't have been the sort that would want to parade around in medals.
Yeah, because I remember I was listening to a series that, Brian Dobson and Donald Byrne. The great Donald Byrne, his great interest in all that, did with D-Day veterans. That must be 15, 20 years ago. And I know it was a result of one of those programs. They were contacted by the French embassy and they said, were all those men who you spoke to, were they all honoured by the French government for what they did in the liberation of France? And it turned out a number of them hadn't. So when the next time a French frigate was in Dublin, they were brought down to the French frigate and they were whistled on and there was an elaborate ceremony and they were honoured for their role, rightly so, in D-Day. By the way, it's estimated, again, we don't know, Gene, between 5,000 and 9,000 Irishmen died during the Second World War and an estimated 12,000 returned to Ireland after it ended in 1945. But I look up more figures on that tonight because that needs to be documented. Gene Douglas, Gurumila Mahogat, very healthy and kind, and regards to your sainted mother, Pat, and condolences and thanks for his service and his heroism to not just everyone who fought in World War II, but to Donald Murray Douglas. Thank you indeed. Today's producer was Owen McLaughlin. Thank you, Gene. And Catherine Thomas is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in store or online.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.